This is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. This portion of the show brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the United States. The original $189 window company. Online at windowworldst.louis.com. I am Paul Harris, Dan Strauss, Ian Geis, and Colin Jeffrey are all here with me today.
Wow, we're doing the 80s today, huh? We're going back and... We did Devo, and who was that?
Billy Idol.
Billy Idol, yeah.
Eyes Without a Face, man.
Oh, man. Wow.
I don't have to be so angry about
it. Yeah, no kidding.
Disappointed in you, Dan.
Angriest throwback DJ of all time.
Man. Mr. Music.
I knew it was in the 80s. Wow.
I was going to say that.
Yeah, I was going to say Billy Idol.
This is the showbiz show portion of our thing. I'm completely thrown by angry DJ.
Yeah, Billy Idol.
Oh.
So disappointed.
Do you remember, speaking of Billy Idol, a Saturday Night Live sketch in the Phil Hartman years when Phil Hartman used to do the perfect Frank Sinatra, and they did a takeoff on the McLaughlin group called the Sinatra Group?
Yes.
And they did one time with Jan Hooks with a bald cap as Sinead O'Connor, Mike Myers and Victoria Jackson as Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet, and Sting, who was the musical guest that week, as Billy Idol. And at one point, Phil Hartman's Frank Sinatra says something, and Billy Idol gives him some lip back and says something along the lines of, shut it, I got chunks of guys like you in my stool.
Yeah, yes. He also said, I don't know, somebody rambled on, Sinead O'Connor rambled on about something. He goes, I don't know a word that you just said.
I don't know what you're saying.
I had no idea what you just said there.
Whatever, cue ball. Oh, man. Before we get to the movies for this week, Colin, I do want to mention something that, you know what Schadenfreude is?
Yeah.
Schadenfreude is a German word where you're getting happiness from other people's misery.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's also the title of a song from the Tony Award-winning musical Avenue Q.
Schadenfreude, Schadenfreude.
No, that's Edelweiss from Sound of Music. Yeah. I'm sorry. Let me do that as an angry DJ would.
That's Edelweiss from the Sound of Music.
Yeah. Stupid.
I got chunks of guys like you in my stool. I'm getting, for months now, I've been getting a little thrill every time I hear a report of how badly the Rams did on television in Los Angeles, because I predicted that the move by Stan Kroenke and his Kroenke gang would be a huge, huge failure.
Besides the two Super Bowl years, this has been the most entertaining Rams season for me, personally.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, Dan Caesar has a piece in today's paper where he reports that in Los Angeles, according to Nielsen, 8% of the homes in L.A. watched Fox's NFL telecast this season. Of course, that includes the Rams. The last season the Rams were here, when we hated the Rams, they got an 8.3. Fox carried 12 games by the Rams this season in Los Angeles, got an 8.3 rating over those 12 games. In St. Louis the previous season, they got a 19.7.
Wow.
19.7 here, 8.3 in Los Angeles. Now, it's a share, and in Los Angeles, there's a lot more people to have a share of, so it counts for more. But still, these are dismal numbers for them. CBS had one Rams telecast in Los Angeles this season. They were down 4% from the previous year, the year we hated them and didn't even watch. And then he has this statistic, which I love. The last three games, the Rams were here in St. Louis, they averaged a 22.0.
Wow.
The last three games of the Rams in Los Angeles had a combined rating of 20.7. They averaged somewhere around 6.9.
Wow. Awesome.
So, in other words, Los Angeles doesn't care about the Rams, which is exactly what I predicted before they moved out there.
Yeah.
It's why the Rams moved here in the first place in the 90s, because people in L.A. don't care about football, and they certainly don't care about crappy football, which is what Stan Kroenke is giving them.
Now, what happens? San Diego apparently is talking about moving to L.A., correct?
To share that new stadium that he's going to build in a couple of years.
Oh, they're going to share the stadium?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Kroenke
would have them as a tenant.
Ah, I see.
So now I hate the Chargers, too.
Yeah. Well, they're not even supporting the Rams, and the Chargers aren't any good either.
No.
Mm-mm. So how are you going to have two teams?
Well, this is a problem that Los Angeles had when they had the Rams and the Raiders. People didn't go to either one, and the Raiders went back to Oakland, and the Rams moved here.
Yeah.
I've had a Twitter account, I guess 5 or 6 years, maybe tweeted 3 times in those 5 to 6 years, but I've used Twitter this year specifically just to tweet at either the commissioner, what's his name?
Goodell,
or Demoff, or
Kroenke,
or Jeff Fisher. I don't think Kroenke has a Twitter page, but before the game this week, Kevin Demoff sent out a picture of the stadium and goes, here's to great things. It's a brand new year, 2017. Here's to great things. And so I tweeted back to him. I said, I don't think karma is finished violating you yet. Maybe next year.
And that was the picture of the 90% empty stadium?
Well, it was before the game, so it was 100% empty. It only, when the game started, I think it filled up about maybe half.
Maybe.
But still, their stadium holds 90,000. So that's a lot bigger than most NFL stadiums.
Okay, I think, so they got 45,000.
Yes, but
they got more than that at the Dome when they sucked.
Third quarter, I think it was down to maybe 10% filled.
Yeah. Oh, that's schadenfreude, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel so good about it. And while we're talking about the NFL, I also have to mention that Chris Boomer Berman, at ESPN, is going to not do NFL broadcasts anymore after the Super Bowl. He's decided, after doing NFL Countdown for 31 seasons and being on SportsCenter doing NFL coverage for 38 years, he's not retiring completely from ESPN. He's going to do other stuff, but he's not going to do the full-time Sunday, like 3-hour pregame and 2-hour postgame. And that made me go to Google to find some of the all-time great Chris Berman nicknames, because this is one of the things he was famous for. And I know people who hate Chris Berman. Anybody here hate Chris Berman?
I hate him.
You really?
Do? Yeah.
Why?
I don't like anything, the way he acts on the air. I really just don't care for it.
You probably hate the puns, too.
I think he gives bad analysis or whatever, and there's not anything I like about him.
I just thought he was entertaining.
Yeah, me too.
And it turns out he's a jerk to people.
Is he?
That he works with.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You can go look up like multiple clips of him when he doesn't think he's on the air barking at people, or when he doesn't think a mic is live.
He's a big guy,
too.
We're
not talking about Carney. We're talking about Chris Berman.
Hey, wait a second. Edelweiss.
I just on Google, I found some of my favorite Chris Berman nicknames, like Harold Growing Baines, Daryl Strawberry Shortcake, Mike Pepperoni Piazza, Moises Skip to My Alu. That's clever stuff.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Joseph Live and Let a Die. Raleigh Chicken Fingers, and the best one of all, Chuck, New Kids on the Knobloch.
That's pretty good.
All right, now we can get to the movies. Well, I saw a movie this week called Hidden Figures. I'll get to that after you do a Monster Calls. That's what you saw this week, right?
I did indeed.
And these are both opening today.
These are both opening today. A Monster Calls.
Is this about my ex-wife calling me?
No. No.
Yeah, I want some goat's blood.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
A Monster Calls. You probably have seen a preview for this, or you've seen a poster for it somewhere. You've seen something online. And it's the poster's a boy like laying at the base of a tree, and there's a little hand coming down to like the tree has a hand because the tree is now a monster, and that's
hey, give me back those apples. That was in Wizard of Oz.
Yes, it was.
Those are my apples.
Yeah.
But this story actually centers around Connor as the young boy played by Lewis McDougall. Mm-hmm. Never heard of him. He's very good in this as a kid. His mother, Felicity Jones, most recently Jyn Erso in Rogue One, is very sick. She has cancer and is not going to be around for long. And this is his story of he likes to draw. But at school, he's picked on. He's trying to deal with the very real emotions of knowing that his mother is going to die. His father is no longer in his life, really. And his grandmother, Sigourney Weaver, is interfering in the relationship between the boy and his terminally ill mother. Mm-hmm. And so what happens one day is he goes down. He has a dream about the area around their house, a constant dream. And this tree comes to life, and only he can see it, and the tree proceeds to tell him these dark fairy tales. These do not always work out well, and that's the point. This is a very real meditation on not just how a child would process loss, but how any of us would process these emotions. And you have this 12-year-old boy in this movie confronting the anger that he feels, the guilt he feels, the sadness, all of it, him processing all of these emotions. It's been sort of sold as maybe like, oh, the family can come around. It'll be a story of, you know, overcoming adversity or personal tragedy. It's not. Don't take your kids to this at all. Do not take your kids to this. This is a dark, not happy movie.
See, first of all, A Monster Calls, based on what you just told me, terrible title for the movie. Because when you put monster in the title, people think it's going to be a monster movie or it's going to be a horror movie. And I thought it was the story of, you know, a kid lying in bed and there's a tree outside the window where he sleeps and he can see the silhouette of that tree in the streetlight and the tree in the wind bangs against the house and it scares him and that tree kind of in his imagination comes to life and chases him. And I thought it was that kind of an adventure. It's not that at all, is it?
It's not that, no. It's sad. It's sad. It's a sad movie. You're watching a boy lose his mother. That's what you're seeing happen. And how is he dealing with it? With this fantastical, surreal creature that helps him along in this process in a way, but it's not like the giving tree. This is not a happy, like, I'm going to help you. This is a tree that's telling him stories that aren't happy because his life isn't happy. This movie does a few things really well. It is gorgeous the way that it's shot. It's the blending of watercolors with the CGI with real life because he's the little boy is an artist of sorts. And so it's the way that it comes together. It's very pretty to look at. And it's nice to have something pretty to look at when you're surrounded by this. The other thing, it doesn't pull punches. Just because it's about a kid doesn't mean that they can't tell the story they're trying to tell and sort of all of its darkness and the grotesquity of life. Life is not clean and it doesn't always work out well. Mm-hmm. And this kid's learning that. And you're going to be able to relate to him, whether or not you've lost a parent or seen someone go, you're going to be able to relate that this isn't there. Sometimes there's not a reason. It doesn't always work out.
Don't you think a lot of parents are going to think because of the marketing, oh, I have to take my kid to see this?
You do not take your kid. Like, I cannot stress that enough. Don't take your kid. It's not appropriate for him. And it's not appropriate for a completely different reason than you're going to have to explain to your child concepts that you don't want to explain to your child.
Mm. Especially, what's this rated?
I believe it's PG-13.
Oh, man.
And it's, again, it's not that there's anything objectionable. It's just sad. It's a downer. Now, really? The third act isn't as satisfying, I think, as most people would like, but it's still a good movie, and it's worth seeing. But you got to be in the right headspace to go see this movie. This is not a date movie. This is a movie you need to be ready to go and see, because if you're just going in thinking, oh, I'll see Liam Neeson as a tree talk to this kid, and well, no, that's not what you're going to get.
All right, so what do you give it on a scale of 10?
I give it a 7 out of 10, and it's a shame that it doesn't appear that it's going to be on the short list for Oscar nominations, because this is a as good as just about anything I've seen when it comes to visual effects this year. And it's a different style from everything you've seen. It's a very pretty movie to look at. It's a very tough movie to handle the themes of, but you're rewarded with a good movie.
Right.
In January.
When you saw it, was it really, really quiet?
I saw it at home by myself. They sent us this one. So
okay.
I'd have to imagine it would be. Yeah. I mean, it's not a...
Unless you hear some people crying, too. I mean...
But again, Sigourney Weaver does good. This young Lewis McDougall does well. And Felicity Jones, so many movies shy away from showing cancer, how devastating it can be.
Mm-hmm.
This does not do that. This shows cancer is... It's not a cute thing that people always survive.
Yeah.
It kills people. And this puts that in, like... direct focus. All right, that's
7 out of 10 for Monster Calls.
Yes, don't take your kids.
The other movie that's opening this weekend is something that you can take your older kids to. I got to start with a little story. About 6 weeks ago, Barack Obama awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom to a woman named Margaret Hamilton, not the one who played the Wicked Witch in The Wizard of Oz, but Margaret Hamilton, the computer scientist, who, among other things, developed the onboard flight software for the Apollo space program. And I saw a clip of that ceremony, and I was surprised and, frankly, embarrassed, because I know a lot about the American space program in the 1960s, Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, all the way up to Skylab. I've read lots of books about that and interviewed lots of people who were involved in that era. I did not know that any women worked for NASA in that kind of capacity in the late 60s. So you can imagine my surprise when I saw this new movie called Hidden Figures, which is about African-American women who were an integral part of our space program, all the way back to the earliest days of the Mercury program. This is a lesson that I think the overwhelming majority of Americans never learned in our history of that era. Did you know that there were any black women involved in that?
No. No, not at all.
No.
No.
The movie focuses on three women. Katherine John. These are all real people, by the way. They're not composites of a whole bunch of... These are all real women. Katherine Johnson, who is played by Taraji P. Henson, who's a star because of that Fox series Empire. She plays Cookie on that show. Katherine Johnson was a mathematician who was responsible for calculating the flight trajectories for John Glenn's orbital flight and others all the way up to the moonshots. To give you an idea how important she was in the program, John Glenn called her boss at NASA and said, "I don't believe that you guys have the numbers right. Get her. Get her to run the numbers. I'm not getting in the ship until you get her to run the numbers. And she tells me personally that it's okay."
Wow.
I never knew that. I never knew about her. There's another woman named Dorothy Vaughn, who's played in the movie by Octavia Spencer, who was a mathematician who was there in the early days of the computers at NASA, and because they brought in a new IBM mainframe that used the Fortran programming language, well, she was a, quote, colored woman, and we can't have her learn that sort of stuff. She would never, quote, be able to understand it, unquote. So she got a Fortran programming language book and taught it to herself so she could program the IBM mainframe and then teach other women, African-American women, how to do that. And they were the basis of that department at NASA. I never knew that. Then the third one who's in this movie is, again, a real woman named Mary Jackson, who's played by the singer Janelle Monáe, who gives a terrific performance in this. She was also in The Birth of a Nation,
mm-hmm.
and she was very good in that. She's another mathematician who wanted to be an engineer, but because of the Jim Crow laws of the time, she couldn't go to the night classes at the white high school, which was the only place she could learn that stuff. So she had to go to court to fight for the right to learn how to be an engineer at NASA, where she was a full-time employee. So these women, whose accomplishments have all been overlooked, finally get their due in this movie. It's called Hidden Figures, and it shows their battles for respect in a society with segregated bathrooms. You can't drink out of the same coffee pot or the same water fountain. You got a work environment full of white men in white shirts and black ties. Jim Parsons from the Big Bang Theory is in there. I think he's miscast in the movie, but he's the one that Taraji P. Henson has to answer to in this. They all look down on these black women. They refused to believe they could contribute anything, but they contributed a lot. Not only do we see them in that work life, but we also get a taste of what their life was like off the job, which humanizes them and lightens it up. And it's a wonderful, wonderful story. The director's name is Theodore Melfi, who a couple of years ago made that movie St. Vincent with Bill Murray and Melissa McCarthy. He co-wrote the movie with a woman named Allison Schroeder. He gets very good performances out of his stars, particularly Taraji P. Henson. But, you know, Octavia Spencer is always good. And Janelle Monáe is turning into a pretty good actress herself. The supporting cast, I mentioned Jim Parsons. Kevin Costner plays their boss. Kirsten Dunst is in there. Mahershala Ali, who is going to be getting award nominations for Moonlight, he's in there as well. I read a review. I don't usually read reviews of movies that I'm going to review, but I saw one this week by a guy by the name of Odie Henderson, who's been an African-American computer programmer for 30 years. Well, he's been African-American longer than that, but he's been a computer programmer for 30 years. And he wrote, quote, "Hopefully, Hidden Figures will inspire women and people of color, and hell, men too, with its gentle assertion that there's nothing unusual nor odd about people besides white men being good at math," unquote. I concur with him wholeheartedly. And I can tell you, the audience I saw this with was more than 50% African-American. And they were cheering in this movie. They walked out feeling good. The white people walked out feeling good. The young people walked out feeling good. And I heard that sentiment being expressed. And if this turns more young people in America onto STEM kind of careers and STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and math, I think that's a fantastic thing. But the best part of doing this as a movie review is it's a really entertaining movie. You're going to walk out of there feeling good and having had a good time. And I'm going to tell you right now, this is going to be on my best movies of the year list. I'm giving it a 9 out of 10.
Wow.
It's called Hidden Figures. It's going to do big box office, and it's not going to be in niche theaters. It's not going to just play like the Tivoli or Plaza Frontenac. This is going to be in, what, a couple thousand screens across the country, you think?
Yeah, it's going to have... Yeah, it already made $1 million.
It
made $1 million last night. It's good. I didn't like it quite as much as you did, and I thought it was good. Again, this is a good movie, .. But there are problems with it. And one of the big things that's so important with these movies, these based on a true story movies, is we have to realize we're not seeing history. Kevin Costner's character, it doesn't exist. That's a fake character. They created him.
Yeah.
Some of these scenes that we see with racism pull you out of the reality of the movie because you're like, well, no one in NASA would ever walk down a hallway with a crowbar and pull a sign off the side. That's where I have issues with it.
That's where you have to have the creative license to allow them to do that. You know, at the end of Fargo, the plane...
Argo. Which is a huge problem.
Argo, right. The Ben Affleck movie about the CIA trying to get these hostages out of Iran. There weren't people actually, Iranians, chasing the plane down the runway. And the tension about whether it was going to be able to take off or not.
No.
That never happened.
They left early in the morning, so the Revolutionary Guards would still be asleep. Like, no joke.
But that doesn't take away from the fact that it's a damn good movie.
No, but I think here it does. And here's why. There's a scene you mentioned specifically where John Glenn calls back and says, this is a scene that shows, I think, everything that's really good about the movie and everything that's great. And you're talking about a scene when John Glenn says, I'm not getting on the rocket unless that girl will check the numbers.
And he says that.
He says that girl. That's a real conversation that took place. Yes. It didn't take place on the gantry as he's preparing to board. It took place before then. The calculations took 3 days to complete, not 45 seconds like we see, or a couple minutes.
Yeah.
But this illustrates what's so good about the movies. He says that girl. He respects her work enough to say, I don't trust the machine. I don't trust you guys. Go get her.
Yep.
But he's still, despite being in this movie portrayed as someone who's much more sympathetic to minorities than everyone else, he still doesn't take the time to learn her name. And that wasn't that he knew her name and forgot it. It's that he never learned her name.
Right.
And so it shows the racism in a very subtle but important way that it's like, I appreciate what she does, but she's a black woman, so I don't owe her the same courtesy. There's a scene between Kirsten Dunst and Octavia Spencer where you see there's a scene in which Kirsten Dunst, who's been a supervisor, says an offhanded remark like, oh, you could never be a supervisor. But trust me, I don't have a problem with you people. And Octavia Spencer walks out of the bathroom where they're speaking and says, I believe you believe that. And that, it's those subtle things. I wish they went more to that instead of peeling stickers off coffee pots and things. I wish they went more to that because that hammers it home. That it was this...
That's the way it was in 1961 America, particularly in the South.
Not every piece of racism was this giant, sprawling... It was subtle. It was more subtle in day-to-day life. And when they focus on that, I think it captures it and shows, wow, these women, and I don't use this word often, they're pretty courageous with what they did.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is absolutely worth it. I think it's something that will end up being shown in schools at some point.
Yep.
Because, again, there's nothing horribly objectionable in it for 13 or 14-year-olds to be watching. I would say, go read the book. Hidden Figures, the Untold Story, I believe, of the Black Computers. They called them computers.
Yeah, the people
because
were
they,
called
they
that.
They sat and did calculations.
They computed things.
There weren't computers yet. The historian grew up near Langley and spent 3 years researching this book. It is thorough. These stories take place over decades. The book is very much worth reading.
Yep.
And if you're interested after watching the movie... go pick up the book.
And by the way, man or woman, black or white, whoever you are, if you were in that room and you were the smartest person in the room, that was saying something. And these three women were the smartest person in the room, whatever room they were in.
It was really...
But we should be embarrassed by the fact that we don't know this story until this book and this movie come
along. I never heard of this. And so, yeah, it was something where I'm like, wow, this is a pretty important part of American history. And I had no idea these women... I didn't know their names.
Yeah. So what do you give it on a scale of 10?
I gave it a 7. Again, good movie. I really enjoyed it. I had some problems with the way they made it, but go see this movie.
Yeah.
Take your tweens, your teens to go see this, because don't let them grow up like we did not knowing about this.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then make them read the real history so they don't think Kevin Costner helped launch the spaceship.
Okay.
Kevin Costner was not there.
I hope that a lot of people see this movie. It's called Hidden Figures. We've got more to go here on the Showbiz Show, but first we've got to take a break. Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris, along with Dan Strauss, Ian Geis, and Colin Jeffrey. It's our Showbiz Show. We do it every week in the 4 o'clock hour on Friday afternoons. So, not tomorrow night, but Sunday night, Jimmy Fallon is hosting the Golden Globes on NBC. It will be the anti-Ricky Gervais hosting because, you know, Jimmy Fallon's not going to say anything that upsets anybody. But he'll probably do a fine job. I saw online today the odds the bookmaker has set for some of the Golden Globe awards. Manchester by the Sea is an overwhelming favorite. On this website, you'd have to bet $170 to make $100.
Okay.
As opposed to Moonlight, which is plus $130, Hacksaw Ridge plus $1,300, Lion plus $2,200, Heller High Water plus $2,500.
Okay.
Which means you'd have to bet $100 and you'd get paid $2,500.
Huh.
So Manchester by the Sea is the favorite there. For best musical or comedy, is there any competition for La La Land?
No. Not even a little. This is probably going to win the Oscar.
It's minus 4,000.
So you have to bet $4,000 to win 100.
Correct.
Oh, my goodness.
For best actress in a drama, Natalie Portman, for playing Jackie Kennedy in Jackie, is the favorite. I know you like Isabelle Huppert. She's plus 500.
Or Ruth Negga, I think, would even be a good choice.
She's plus 1,400.
Yeah.
Amy Adams is plus 800 for Arrival. Jessica Chastain plus 2,500 for Miss Sloan. Best actor, they've got Casey Affleck as the favorite at minus 260, then Denzel Washington at plus 250, Andrew Garfield for Hacksaw Ridge, 1,300, Joel Edgerton for Loving, plus 1,500, and Viggo Mortensen for a movie that apparently only you and I liked, Captain Fantastic, at plus 1,800. I guess other people liked him. That's how he got nominated.
Yeah.
And then they have Emma Stone as the overwhelming favorite for Best Actress in a Musical and Comedy, and Ryan Gosling as Best Actor, both from La La Land.
Yeah, although I think Colin Farrell crushes it in The Lobster, which is one of the weirdest movies I've seen in quite some time.
What is The Lobster again?
The Lobster is in a dystopian future, but don't let that turn it off.
Yeah. Because I'm already tuning out.
Society still exists. If you are ever single, you get to go to this hotel, and if you've not found someone within 30 days to marry, they turn you into an animal.
What?
Yeah, they turn you into an animal.
So it's not like Logan's Run, where if you don't renew, you die. This is if you don't get laid,
If you don't marry someone in 30 days, you get turned into an animal.
Well, that's a horrible movie for the 21st century because fewer and fewer people are getting married.
Is this a true story?
It might be. I don't know.
It's not a true story because fewer and fewer people are getting married.
Whoa.
And in this one, if you don't get married, you get turned into an animal.
He chooses a lobster. That's what, when you check in, they say, what animal would you like to be turned into? And he says, a lobster. And she's like, oh, many people pick dogs. That's why there's so many dogs. And he's sitting there with a dog. And she says, oh, who's this? Oh, it's my brother. He didn't get married in 30 days. So he's walking around with his brother, who's a dog now. And he's got to go through this because his wife left him.
Wow.
It's one of the weirdest, sort of quirkiest movies.
You think?
Oh, it's funny.
Why is your brother licking himself? Because he can.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ryan Gosling's very good.
Why are the twins licking each other? because we Googled the wrong thing. Don't Google that, kids. Don't Google twins licking each other.
No,
Trust me.
No, stop. No.
All right.
Television, though, I'll just give you a few of these. Best series for a drama, TV series for a drama. I think a Netflix series, The Crown, has a good chance to win.
Mm-hmm.
Veep for comedy, I hope, wins over Transparent, which I don't think is particularly funny.
I've never gotten the whole Transparent thing.
It's a decent show. It's a pretty good show.
Not a comedy.
It's not a comedy. That's a problem. It's like The Martian wasn't a comedy last year.
I saw right through that whole thing. I don't watch it at all.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
That's Transparent. Thank you. Thank you very much.
The People vs. O.J. Simpson for miniseries.
Versus
O.J. Simpson.
Not verse.
Sorry. Yes. Thank you.
Pet peeve.
This is O.J. Simpson. And then everything else, I think we'll see The Crown pick up a couple. O.J. Simpson, that will win, I think, several, actually, when you go through all of it. But Westworld might actually win one award, and that might be for Best Supporting Actress, or Thandie Newton, who was very good in it, I thought. But
Westworld should win an award for TV show most like Lost, in that it just gives you more questions and never provides answers. No, I gave up after four episodes.
Oh, my gosh, it answers everything. It's so worth it. You get to the end, and you're like, this is great. It answers everything I wanted, and it sets up a second season so well. I'm so excited, but I have to wait till 2018.
Well, I feel like an idiot now?
Yes.
2018, you have to wait?
It takes so long for them to make it. It doesn't look like there's going
to
be...
They have to start the robots from scratch, Dan.
Whoa.
They're not just born... You have to be built.
Man.
Yeah, but they're built in a very neat
way. I don't know what I'm talking about.
It's crazy.
Saturday night, HBO is airing its documentary Bright Lights about Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds. This was originally scheduled to air in the springtime, but after they both died within 36 hours of each other, they pushed up the premiere date. And I saw a clip from it. And if you're into Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds,
Why not? You
probably want to watch this Saturday night. And if you haven't seen Carrie Fisher's one-woman show, find that on Netflix and look for it. It was very, very entertaining.
I've just one thing to say real quick. A couple members of the St. Louis Film Critics Association that I'm in, they write for a site, ZekeFilm.org. They are doing their best films of 2016 roundup. You can go and talk to some critics about what they thought were the best movies. You can question them. You can do whatever. It's next Friday night, so a week from today at 7 at the Emerson Library on the campus of Webster University. ZekeFilm.org for more information.
Okay. The new season of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee has debuted. I think it went online yesterday.
I didn't watch it yet.
It's with Kristen Wiig. I have to say, I don't get the Kristen Wiig thing.
Same here.
I thought that she was funny in about one and a half roles on Saturday Night Live, but I wasn't a fan of Bridesmaids, and she was okay in the Ghostbusters remake, and she was okay in The Martian because she was not the central figure. She was a supporting cast member, and she was fine playing a regular human being. But all the rest of the goofy stuff that she's known for, did it appeal to you?
I didn't watch her yet on this, so I don't...
No, I mean all the other career stuff that she's done.
Oh, no. I think most of her characters and everything are annoying. Irritating.
Yeah.
That's their baseline. How she thinks to get comedy across is just be as irritating and obnoxious as she can.
Yeah.
So have you watched this episode yet?
I have not.
I will. I will, too,
because I like Seinfeld and I like the show, and it's only 18 minutes of my life.
And I didn't think the Lorne Michaels from last season would be good, because he's not a comedian.
Yeah.
I actually found it funny and enlightening to hear the guy who created SNL talk about it not being always great.
Mm-hmm.
That's... That's something pretty neat.
Interesting insight. Next week, it's going to be Norm MacDonald. And the week after that, Cedric the Entertainer. Then Lewis Black. Bob Einstein is back for a second time. Yes. I could listen to him tell stories all day and night.
Exactly.
And Christoph Waltz.
Really?
Yes. Who was so good in Django Unchained.
And Inglourious Bastards?
Yeah, I didn't see that, but there's that scene early on in Django Unchained where he's the guy going around as a bounty hunter, mm-hmm. and he's brought Jamie Foxx along with him, and they go into the town, and they're in that bar. And it's the sheriff of that uh-huh. town who they are going to execute yes. the bounty on. The 5 minutes of that movie are among the most riveting things I've seen in any movie in the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
And it's because of Christoph Waltz's performance.
That's so good.
He's so good. But he's not a comedian. It's comedians in cars getting coffee. Yeah.
He's expanding the definition.
All right.
Maybe
fine.
He's kind of funny.
Maybe he is. We'll find out.
Inglourious Lucky Bastards. He's starring in a new movie with Joe Buck.
Very good.
There you go. Oh,
wow. Very good, Dan. Next hour, the Harris Challenge with a special new bonus prize added that I think you're going to like. Plus, knuckleheads in the news and Mike Adams all ahead here on the Big 550 KTRS.